Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Wednesday holiday edition of American Hit Radio. Here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 p.m. until 6 p.m. Yes, I am your host, Tom Ryan. I am here for each of those shows. With me every single time, 99.99999% of the time, is my lovely wife and co-host, Heidi Morales Ryan. Right, Heidi?
Right.
Wait a minute. We got to change here. The fact of the matter is, it is Wednesday, the day before Thanksgiving, and Heidi hosts Thanksgiving. She's home cooking, getting the turkey ready, cleaning the house, doing what she does. However, my son Kyle, who has been an occasional guest on this program from time to time, you sort of grew up with this show happening, I think, Kyle.
Yeah,
in some
but
ways.
Never really offered that much to it.
Well, that can change now. Actually, I remember my son, Kyle, who's actually working for the radio station up in Albany. What are the call letters up there, Kyle?
Up there, it's WCDB Albany, 90.9.
CBD?
Right. WCDB.
Cool. Yeah, so kind of following in my footsteps, working on the radio up in Albany is Kyle. But I remember the very first time. I've been on this show longer than I care to remember sometimes. And it's funny because I don't really remember how many years it's been, but I do remember having you come in here. And I've got tapes of it, when you were probably 8 or 9 years old.
Yeah, and I had to give my favorite Beatles song, I think.
Yeah, we were talking about music that we liked. I remember we had some of our neighbor friends as well. The Silvermans were here, Ben and Jenna Silverman,
right,
with you and Dare. Actually, I'm saying that you were eight. You were maybe not even eight.
Wasn't Gomez at that show, too?
Yes, I was probably still working with John Gomez at that time.
Yeah.
Well, let's get to back what we're talking about now. I mean, believe it or not, Kyle, I mean, well, you know, on Wednesdays, what I generally tend to do are what I consider anniversary shows, where this being, you know, November 2011, I'll go back to November 2001 or 91 or 81, 71, whatever.
Right.
And a few weeks back, I hit November 71 and I looked up to see what albums were released and I was stunned at what I saw. There were so many great albums that I realized I had to do multiple shows.
Okay.
Well, so far I've done 3 shows on albums from November of 19, the 1 month, 3 shows, and I've still got one left to do. But I figured that since this is the holiday weekend, I'll save the 4th album show for 71 till next week, and that'll give us a chance to focus on singles.
Let's hope December was a weak month.
Yeah, because, well, the thing, that's just it. I could have covered 61 or 81 or 91, but 71 is eating up so much of my time because it was such, in my opinion, such an enormously productive time period in the history of music. Singles kind of prove that, too. So let's play a couple singles. I'm curious to know how many of these you're going to recognize or not. And
mostly the latter.
Well, I wonder. We'll find out.
I guess so.
The first track I'm going to play, I know you know the band. It's Sly and the Family Stone.
Okay.
This is one of the albums that we focused on, actually. Sly released the album, There's a Riot Going On in November of 71, and we played it. And Heidi, we were talking mostly about how unbelievably burned out Sly sounded on that album. I mean, there's a lot of time that had passed between his previous records and this one. And in the interim, I mean, so many things went wrong for this guy. I mean, you name it, personal problems, drug problems, confidence problems, reliability problems. At this point in time, he failed to show up at, he only made 2 out of every 3 shows that he was scheduled to. He wouldn't even come out on stage. People would show up for an 8 o'clock performance, and he might come out at 11 o'clock. Maybe he wouldn't. He'd sit backstage and decide to not even go out for the show.
Right.
So this was not good for his career.
Yeah, you could, real crowd pleaser.
Yeah. There were definite issues going on. And the craziest thing about it is that how his voice had changed. This is Sly Stone, the guy who was at Woodstock leading the most raucous, upbeat, funky music of anybody at that entire, you know, that entire weekend. And now he sounds like a stoned out drunk at 4 a.m, desperately in need of a drink of water. It's kind of funny to hear what happened to his voice. And the album had one hit, though, and it was a biggie. It went to number one. And it was as funky as anything that Sly ever did. It's a great song, but see if you can more or less hear what I'm talking about with his voice and see if you can catch the fact that he's maybe pushing back at his audience a little bit with the subject of this track. It's called Family Affair.
It's a family affair. child grows up to be somebody that just loves to learn. And another child grows up to be somebody you just love to burn. Mom loves the both of them. You see, it's in the blood. Both kids are good and mom. Blood's thicker than the mud. It's a family affair.
It's a family affair.
It's a family affair. Still checking each other out. Hey, nobody wants to blow. Nobody wants to be left out. You can't leave cause your heart is there. But you can't stay cause you've been somewhere else. You can't cry cause you look broke down. But you're crying anyway cause you're all broke down. It's a family affair.
Sly Stone, hanging on by a thread there, it seems. But it was a number one hit in November 1971, Kai. Did you know that song?
Oh, yeah, I knew that song. That song is pretty big.
Yeah, that's probably still getting enough airplay for you to be familiar with it. That's what I figured. You're probably going to know a lot of this stuff. You should check out the album. There's a riot going on, though, for just basically, it's sort of like watching a car crash.
Really?
Yeah, it's really strange because you're having this guy who is so successful. And the album is just, it's the sound of falling apart.
See, like, for me, I'd have to listen to the album because I'm not getting that from just that song.
No, because that song is pretty together.
Yeah,
the song
that's,
is
right.
By far the most together thing on the record. When we were playing excerpts from the album, Heidi, I don't think she had ever heard it before. And she was shaking her head like, wow, I didn't realize it got this weird.
Right.
But it's one of those albums that actually make an awful lot of critics' best of all time lists. Even though it's the sound of a guy falling apart, there's a real deep funkiness to it.
A lot of times those like added factors just add to how much you can like appreciate an album, you know?
Yeah, there's this emotional edge that gets taken into account. Obviously, with any good music, it's not just the notes.
Yeah, whenever you got like the story to go along with and all the things that are going along with the singer's background, like that just gets added on to what the album's saying in itself.
Exactly, exactly. The next track I want to play, this is a guy who, there's really not much to say about Michael Jackson anymore. I mean, his story is probably overtold, but it's, you know, I've got to tell you, I've always had this like sort of a, felt a kindred spirit with him in some way because we were born so close. He and I were born just like really just a few weeks apart from one another. And seeing him singing at his age was mind-blowing to me. I mean, here I am, I'm 11, and he's 11 or 12, and
right.
These hits are coming out by the Jackson 5, and like, he's my age? This is incredible. Now, this, by November of 1971, he started his solo career. He actually left the Jackson 5, and this is the song that he basically used to kick off his solo career. Listen to this song. I want to try it. If you imagine that if this was sung by, say, a fully grown male adult, I would think that this song would have been horrible. I mean, it just would have been so annoying. But hearing it sung by a guy who was, at this point in time, 13 years old. Yeah, we were just both 13. He probably sung it before he was 13, but, you know, by the time it was a hit in November of 71. There's something about how he can sing this song and he doesn't have to slip into falsetto to hit these high notes because his voice is still young enough. So hear him soar into these, through this melody. Like I said, that would have been the most obnoxious thing if it was sung by an adult. But hearing a guy who can sing it like flawlessly without having to resort to tricks is pretty incredible. From November 1971, then, Michael Jackson's debut hit single, Got to Be There. As a solo artist, that is the song that kicked off one of the most remarkable and spectacular careers in the history of music. Michael Jackson with his first solo single, Got to Be There. Kyle and I are playing tracks from November 1971, and poor Kyle, who has his own radio show up in Albany, have him here basically playing old pop top 40 songs, and up in Albany, you're not even allowed to play top 40 at all, right?
Nah, nothing. You can't have been top 40 at, like, any point in time, but, I mean, at this point, I still know what's going on, at least. Like, I'll get lost once we start playing songs that haven't lasted the test of time as well.
Although that's probably where it's going to get the most interesting, I think, as well.
That's actually a weird comment to make about Michael Jackson, too.
Right, exactly. Yeah, but so that's just it. I mean, you know, you, right now, you being born in 1992...
Thank God he got that right.
Right, I should. I had to think about it for half a second. But yeah, so obviously this music way before your time, although you're pretty good with music history. You're familiar with a lot of this stuff.
I'm all right, but...
But mostly you're into contemporary stuff more than anything, and as a rule, also stuff that isn't top 40. So I know that I've got you completely out of your element.
Right.
Not at all a problem here in terms of like what we're doing, though, because I've got some of the info. I'm just curious to know your feelings about some of this stuff in terms of its relevance at all, if it appeals to you. I mean, I guess Got to Be There is a little bit too sweet, a bit treacly by anybody's standards these days.
But. I mean, at least it's got some substance to it. I mean, even you were saying, like, kissing at that young of an age, like, you're not expecting to hear that from a kid like that, but...
Yeah, exactly. There's some emotional heft to it, like, wow, and he pulls it off.
Right.
Pretty cool. The next artist that I'm playing was absolutely at she was at the peak of her game. Aretha Franklin was sort of a superstar of the late 60s, and by 1971, which is the period that we're covering right now, specifically November 1971, she released what some people might say might have been one of her best, if not her very best, album. It was called Young, Gifted, and Black. I want to read this basically from what I had written in my book, American at Radio, because it kind of explains what the times were like and what music was going on in music around 1971. Times had changed considerably since the mid-60s when Aretha burst onto the popular scene. Like a dropped pane of glass, pop music had splintered into an endless number of shards, each with their own faction of fans, but each only a fraction of their previous scope. By definition, these subgroups often caused separatism, since what appealed to one group would alienate another. And surprisingly, although it was short-lived, soul music was moving closer to the mainstream in November of 71. In a surprising reversal of past trends, black music was not only the hippest, but also the most commercial thing happening. And Aretha Franklin, the queen of soul, was a pivotal figure at this time. She displayed great pride in her culture and began emphasizing it in her music. Although superficially it would seem like a contradiction, she appealed to a broader audience by getting in touch with her blackness. Instead of touring with a Vegas-style band and appearing on stage with a bouffant hairdo, she emphasized the contemporary and cultural sound of her material and wore her hair in a natural Afro style. Basically, she was now appealing not only to the aging hippies, but to the teenagers who wanted to be hippies and to the entire black audience that never forgot just how exciting she could be. Aretha, she was doing something pretty special around this time. Here's her hit single, then, from November 1971. I'm curious to get your opinion on this track. It's called Rock Steady.
Move your head. saw somebody who looked just like you. She walked like you do. I thought it was you. As she turned the corner,
to make the point here, we are listening to songs that are just debuting on the Top 40 in November of 1971. Each of the songs we're playing today were brand new to the Top 40 as of November 1971. And you seem surprised by that, Kai.
Yeah, I wanted to make sure that that was the way it worked, because I don't know, I'm kind of surprised that, like, I already know the first four songs, and they're pretty big songs that had this long-lasting effect. Like,
exactly. They're 40 years old now. These songs
and they all debuted in 1 month in 1971. Well, debuted on the Top 40 charts.
Exactly. But this is why I've been having a hard time getting past November 1971, whether it's albums or singles. You can just see, like, wow, in 1 month, you know, these many classic songs have stood the 40-year test of time.
Right.
And you still hear them with a certain amount of regularity. It's pretty incredible.
Like, I can't imagine people in, like, 2040 looking back on 2011 and being like, look at all these great songs from November 2011 or anything like that.
I'm glad to hear you say that, because that's been my point. And sometimes I think, is it just because I'm some old curmudgeon who's just getting grumpy and I don't, you know, the new music is junk compared to when I was a kid,
no.
You know?
I mean, you know, I love this current music, but it's not going to have the same lasting effect that songs like these have.
I doubt it. Mostly because it can't get the same impact anymore. I mean, these songs were still getting some sort of some broad airplay. You know, contemporary songs, it's harder to have that happen. There's way too many things that are going on. The media is way... I was talking about how, like, rock and roll is beginning to splinter in that little thing that I wrote. Compared to now, they took those pieces, those shards of glass I was talking about, and they stomped them into the ground. Now it's like grains of sand. There's so many different things.
Right.
It's crazy. But those are, like, right there. We had back-to-back two really big soul hits, Aretha Franklin with Rocksteady, and that track, which was The Stylistics, singing You Are Everything. This whole thing was coming out, I don't know if you know about this, Kyle, but in November, around 1971, this thing was just starting up called the Philadelphia Sound, mostly revolving around people like a producer by the name of Tom Bell.
I do not know that.
Bands like the Spinners and the OJs and that band, the Stylistics. That was their debut single, what we just heard, You Are Everything. They went on to have a career, though, that included songs like Betcha by Golly Wow, I'm Stone in Love with You, Break Up to Make Up, You Make Me Feel Brand New. I don't know if you would know those songs as well. But
not sounding familiar.
All with that same keening falsetto voice by that same singer, Russell Tompkins Jr. was his name, singing on that track. One more soul song I want to play from the same era, because this was really what was the hippest thing on the top 40 charts in November of 71 was the soul music. Staple Singers. Awesome, awesome, awesome band. Probably one of my favorite groups of all time. Not just the fact that the three sisters were so great at what they did, but, you know, Roebuck Pop Staples playing guitar and singing with his three daughters. Just they basically took gospel music, added a pop sensibility to it, and came up with these songs that are just so amazingly cool. The guy who wrote this song, Sir Mac Rice, is the same guy that wrote the song Mustang Sally. I find that fairly incredible. I did not know that until recently. But this song, coming from the Staple Singers, I think is so emotionally powerful. Check out the words and really listen to what they're basically saying, the same thing that that I would be saying to, like, to you as a kid. If that's everything, like, you know, basically what you need to do, you know, to basically stay in line is you need to respect yourself. Here's the Staple Singers. As far as pop hits go, I don't think it gets any better than that. That song still, to this day, moves me almost like it's so great. It makes my eyes tear up. I just love it. It's just like, it's what amazing strength in that song. How does it strike you?
It doesn't strike me as much as the other ones, but I could see you like really getting affected by that one.
Ah, me for me. You know what it is? It's like, it's the social observation of the lyric with the attitude and the amazing amount of expression in Mavis's voice, and then her dad's almost matter-of-fact delivery, and then there's the horns that are just awesome with that back. And
every time something was about to come in, you were like just waiting for
it. Ooh, this is going to be good. That's just really awesome stuff there. Staple Singers from November 1971. Let me remind you that you are listening to American Hit Radio. We're here every Wednesday and Friday from 5 until 6 p.m. If you are interested in our program, if for some reason you have a hard time tuning in at 5 o'clock for one reason or another, or if you're thinking that maybe you want to find some shows from our past that might be covering topics that you're interested in, we post each and every one of our shows on our website, and they are all there for instant availability, instant listening, if you could say. If you want to just type in the name of our show into your search engine, and we'll pop right up. We should be the number one thing right on the top of the list. Just type in American Hit Radio. Our website is AmericanHitNetwork.com. Right there on the homepage, when it pops up, you're going to see our Wednesday show on the left, our Friday show on the right. And I am not exaggerating now when I can say that there are over 400, maybe 500 different shows that are available for you to wade through and pick the one that you want to listen to. They're all play on demand. So you're going to have a lot of spare time this weekend. Fill it up by doing nothing but listening to us. Ruin your entire Thanksgiving weekend. Or just put it on as background music with lots of information. Just forgot to put that out there. There it is. Meanwhile, let's get back to November 1971, a period that in time that is near and dear to my heart, because I'm a 13-year-old kid listening to this. Kyle, you are definitely not even a twinkle in my eye yet.
Negative 19.
right. But all this stuff was really profound for me. This is also the time that I began to start my album collection. And I remember that one of the first albums that I had bought contained this next song. Rod Stewart, in 1971, was at this point still a quite respectable songwriter and mostly as a singer. He was the singer of Faces, a band that in 1971 I totally loved. This is before he became this silly, do you think I'm sexy dude, and all this other junk that Tonight's the Night that I just thought absolutely was so unbelievably sad and miserable. At this point in time, he was amazingly cool. And the albums he was putting out, Maggie May was his contemporary hit around this time. And in fact, that song was from the album Every Picture Tells a Story, which came out around this period in time. Another single, though, from this time was him doing a cover of a song that was originally recorded by The Temptations, a Motown hit. It was a big hit for The Temptations when they recorded it, called I Know I'm Losing You. Rod Stewart did it, added these crazy primal drums with Faces playing all the background. And you'll basically, I think you'll understand why Faces are one of my favorite bands when you hear just how awesomely they kick this song out of the park and turn it into their own. From the album, Every Picture Tells a Story, credited to Rod Stewart, here's their version of I Know I'm Losing You. We'll be right back.
someone's taken my place. Could it be that I'm losing you? When I look into your eyes, a reflection of a face I see. Oh Lord, I'm losing you. I'm hurt, downhearted, unworried girl, 'cause that face doesn't belong to me.
The saddest thing about me playing that track is that I am able to say almost unequivocally that Rod Stewart never rocked that hard again after that track.
Right.
40 years now I've been waiting for him to do something like that. And
at this point, it's probably too late.
Yeah, I mean, I give up. I actually gave up 35 years ago. I mean, by the mid-70s, I was squirming. I couldn't believe what he had done to his career. It was just so embarrassing, I think, to have him go from this really awesome, powerful, gutsy rock and roll to that quasi-disco, you know, silk-wearing, you know, Tonight's the Night type of stuff that he did. Oh, it was terrible. But he was rocking like a crazy person around November of 1971, boy. And that album, Every Picture Tells a Story, is definitely an all-time classic, worth hearing. Definitely worth getting your hands on if you're interested in music at all from this era or music history. Well, with the time that we've got, let's play yet another classic, single at least. Van Morrison, one of my favorite artists. I play him all the time. I love him. But by 1971, the albums that he was putting out were actually getting a little bit weaker I mean, he made some of the most classic albums of all time. Moondance and Astral Weeks are unbeatable classics. But the albums after that, he moved up to Woodstock. They were a little bit too hippified, but they had his best singles. So although the albums weren't strong, the singles were. So let's hear a single then from his album at this point. I believe the album was called Tupelo Honey. Here's the lead single from that album. It's called Wild Night. Okay, simple question for you now, Kyle.
Okay.
So far, I have played 7 tracks. Is there anything at all that you didn't recognize?
Not the last one, but the one before that I didn't recognize.
Respect Yourself?
Yeah.
By the Staple Singers?
Didn't know that one.
How about that? Well, that's cool. That's good. But you knew the Rod Stewart song?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's very interesting. Okay, so 6 out of 7. I'm going to have to play that Staples track a little bit more often at home. Beat that into your head, because that's my favorite of all.
Brainwash me while
play.
I sleep or something.
Exactly. All of these songs became hit singles. When I say hit singles, they all debuted on the Top 40 in the month of November 1971. It's pretty incredible to believe that music was that awesome, pop music especially, that the Top 40 would have this wealth of tracks, all basically just debuting at the same time. Now, the next track I'm going to play, Kyle, I'm going to bet I'd bet 10 to 1 odds that you don't know this song at all. This is one that more or less did fall through the tracks, and it just barely reached the top 40 in the sense that it actually stopped at number 40. Okay. So it was only on the top 40 for 1 week at that position, and it vanished. So in that sense, you really don't hear it nearly as often as these other songs. But it's interesting for a couple of reasons. First of all, well, the band is 10 years after. They were one of the bands that played at Woodstock as well. But not a top 40 band at all, sort of like a blues band, a boogie band. But on this song, what they sort of do is they the song is sort of like a diatribe of complaints about society from the aspect of a jaded hippie. But what it's interesting is you would think that that would mean that their complaints would all be aimed at the right. Like they're complaining about things that are basically holding back their hippiness or whatever. But that's not the case. They complain about sexuality issues. They complain about the fact that, listen to the song. And I would like to get your opinion without me basically extrapolating too much on it yet. But especially worth noting is how awesome the guitar solo is at the end. Because if nothing else, the lead guitar player, Alvin Lee, was the center point of this band. So it's a pop single. Tell me what you think of this track. It's called I'd Love to Change the World.
Thank you.
Now, Kyle, when I was, when that song came out, I was 13. I loved that track. I just thought it was so awesomely powerful, you know, musically, really. I would play it over and over again, I guess because the guitar is so great and it's got a really good dark feel to it.
Yeah, like for me, that song was taking me back to the month and like the things that were going on in people's head more than any other one you've played so far. Like that one seemed to really kind of get you in the perspective of what was going on.
Time frame wise.
Right.
Yeah, which is really amazing because considering how well I know the song, the political perspective of the words shock me now. I mean, absolutely flat out shock me because, again, if you were a pop artist in 1971, it was almost impossible to not feel disenfranchised from society. The whole hippie movement was about that. It was anti-establishment. It was all about rebelliousness. That's what rock and roll was. And yet this song, now I'm listening to these words, this is about as staunch right-wing politics as I've ever heard in a pop song ever in my entire life. I mean, let's the words again in that first verse. Everywhere is freaks and Harrys, dykes and fairies. Tell me, where is sanity? I can't believe that he sings that. And then he follows it up by saying, tax the rich, feed the poor, till there are no rich no more. He sounds like he's a spokesperson for Fox 5.
So you're saying that's why I had that really short stay in the top 40?
I don't know if that's why. I think at the time, people just thought it was a cool song, and they basically
I was debating, like, that could also be a reason why it got to the top 40. Like,
yeah.
It could kind of have both effects.
I think a lot for the reason it got near the top 40 was just the words in itself just basically brought it along. Yeah, but it was the music really that did it. But I hear the words now and I'm shocked that in the middle of this whole youth movement thing, they have lyrics like that that were actually being espoused by a band that played at Woodstock. It stuns me in retrospect, absolutely stuns me. That, by the way, is 10 years after Alvin Lee, and the song is I'd Love to Change the World, a song that has changed its meaning in my mind at least drastically from the way I originally heard it 40 years ago when it first came out. I know you're not going to know this next one either, Kyle. I'm going deep here on this one. This was just barely a top 40 hit as well. The band, now completely forgotten, their name is Sweat Hog. The drummer, is actually, his name was Frosty. I had known of this guy because he played for a guy named Lee Michaels, the guy who had the hit single Do You Know What I Mean back around this time. He had just left Lee Michaels to form his own band, which was the band Sweat Hog, and they put out this strange semi-gospel hard rock track called Hallelujah. Here it is.
Look alive, who shed a ray, till I found some silence back in everything.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much. I wanted to wish you all a very happy holiday, happy Thanksgiving. I want to thank everybody for listening. Thanks to the callers who just called in to say hello. It's always nice to hear that, especially new callers. I love it when people call up. So thank you so much. I really especially want to thank my son, Kyle, for coming in and accompanying me while Heidi is home preparing our dinner for tomorrow. It was a lot of fun, Kyle. Thank you so much for coming down.
No, I enjoyed the show. I enjoyed a lot more than I thought I would, actually.
It wasn't the torture you expected. Well, thanks, everyone. We'll leave you with one more track then from the band that that guy... Frosty was in, Lee Michaels, doing a cover version of an old Marvin Gaye song, Can I Get a Witness, also from November of 71. Take care, everyone. Have a great holiday, and I'll tune in on Friday for The Beatles Show. Take care. Bye-bye.
Basement of some random building.
This is 90.3
WHPC,
Garden City,
New York.